Welcome to Asia Calling, your window on Asia. This week, a special edition where we focus on food sovereignty and water security. We meet fierce Indigenous women in India's eastern state of Odisha who are fighting against cash crops overtaking their land.
We are going to fight it tooth and nail.
In Indonesia, Indigenous methods of rice growing keeping one community self-sufficient. While in Pakistan, arsenic in the water threatens to poison up to 60 million people. And we look at some solutions to the world's growing water problems. Thanks for tuning in to the show. I'm Nicole Kirby. In the Indian state of Odisha, the Kond, a large Indigenous community, are losing their forest and their food sources. Cash crops, plantations of teak and eucalyptus, are encroaching on land that has long been a rich source of diverse and nutritious food. But Kond families are raising their voices and fighting against threats to their lifeline. From Roygada in Odisha, Kalpana Pradham has this story.
Lush emerald green hills stretch out into the distance in all directions as we drive along undulating roads towards Kalpada tribal village. This is the southern part of Odisha, formerly known as Orissa state. These hills are home to the Dongriya Kond tribe, whose traditional practices have helped nurture the area's dense forest and unusually rich wildlife. We reach the village of Kalpadar, nestled at the base of a hill. A group of Kond women are sitting together, talking and singing. Shukumati Shikoka tells me that the forest is their lifeline and Kond people are very protective of it.
We protect the forest not just because it gives the food, but also because many living things, animals, ants, monkeys, everyone lives there and they're all part of our lives.
Kond people regularly gather fruits and roots from the forest. They also grow vegetables, millets, legumes and corn in the area. After each harvest, they store and exchange seeds to ensure local adaptability and availability. They grow a wide variety of produce, which maintains soil fertility.
When we grow something, it is not just for us, but it's for everyone in forest who we consider as our family. As long as the forest is there, we will continue to be prosperous.
Odisha is one of the poorest states in eastern India, and here Kond make up a quarter of the population. But Shukumati tells me Kond people have traditionally been very prosperous.
We as community, as whole Adivasi, are the most prosperous community in the world. That's what we believe.
As I travel between villages in the area of Munigura, I see a large tract of cleared land. Since 2013, Odisha State Forest Department has been converting this diverse ecosystem into a single-species cash crop plantation zone. Forest is being cleared and replaced with crops of eucalyptus, teak, rubber and coffee. The Odisha State Government plans to continue cash crop plantations until 2022. The initiative is supposed to create 45,000 jobs over a 10-year period. But villager Landi Shikokwa doesn't want to boost from a life of self-sufficiency to working cash crops.
Forest Department. They come here and they want to plant eucalyptus and teak trees. We ask them, what value does it add to our lives? It really adds no value for us or for the lives in the forest, so we are resisting them.
Anticipating an acute shortage of food in the future, the Kund women are taking the matter up with the government officials. But they are also taking matters directly into their own hands. In an act of resistance, villagers have cut down the teak and eucalyptus and replaced them once again with traditional crops.
Because as forest dwellers, the fruit-bearing trees like dates, jackfruit, mango and berry are valuable for us and for other animals in the forest. We are very much against it. We are going to fight it tooth and nail.
Several indigenous people have been arrested in protest against cash crop plantations. And last year, two people from the Nabrangpur tribal group were killed as they fought for their land. The Kund people have been told that they will be able to access subsidized rice, wheat and pulses under the government food security program. But it won't match the variety and nutrition of their traditional diet. Salome Nadimi Dodi is a nutrition researcher with 20 years' experience working on the food culture of India's indigenous tribes.
They gather a whole lot of colorful greens, mushrooms, tubers, fruits, and number of animals, including insects and worms. They exactly know how and when to harvest and what is to be left for regeneration.
She was watched a devastating decline in the Kund's diet.
The health and the nutritional status of the communities is very pathetic state.
Adivasi or tribal people in Odisha are already feeling the impact of ecological destruction. Around 46% tribal children under the age of 5 are underweight and have stunted growth, according to a 2014 study by UNICEF and the Ministry of Women and Child Development. Shikoka Shiromoti is a mother of 3 kids, and she says she can see how poor nutrition is taking its toll.
Shikoka Shiromoti.
Our people could climb from one mountain to another. They could walk miles without getting tired. That's not the kids today.
But the Kund are not giving up. As I leave the area, I hear villagers singing a traditional song that promises they will dedicate their lives to protect the forest. For Asia Calling, I am Kalpana Pradhan in Odisha State, India.
Arsenic poison is often associated with murder plots and suicide, especially on the big screen. Now, that deadly substance has been found in alarmingly high levels in Pakistan's Indus Valley, putting 60 million people at risk of poisoning. Correspondent Muldasa Shah travelled to Sindh and Punjab provinces and has this report.
In Pakistan's Thar desert, the dry heat is scorching. Sharif Burfat is 45. Moving slowly with a walking stick. He looks much older than that. He is covered in sweat, the result of illness rather than heat. Sharif is suffering from arsenic poisoning.
My bones are weak, but still I am grateful to Lord, because many of my fellow villagers' bones have broken. They break easily. It just takes a slow jerk and a little fall.
When I met him, Sharif was returning home to Sindh province after seeing a doctor in Hyderabad, 5 hours away by bus.
I have been sick for a long time and have consulted local doctors several times, but they failed to diagnose my illness. In a bigger hospital, I was diagnosed with a disease caused by arsenic poison in the water.
Arsenic is odorless, tasteless and colorless, so it is difficult to know if water is contaminated.
Drinking water is one of the main causes of the disease, because we drink contaminated water. People here are not aware that the water is poisonous. Diseases are spreading in the area because of contaminated water.
In the Punjab and Sindh provinces of Pakistan, people once took their drinking water from open dams and irrigation channels. By the 1980s, it became clear that diarrhea and cholera were rife. Residents started digging wells to get water. But that led to a new problem, arsenic poisoning.
I feel my bones are still weak. I feel pain in my joints too. I get tired.
People are poisoned by arsenic when they drink contaminated water or when they eat fruit, vegetables and animal produce that has come into contact with contaminated water. Arsenic poisoning affects all organs of the body. It can cause vomiting and diarrhea, skin lesions, weakening of the bone marrow, neurological and circulation problems, and respiratory failure. Lubna Bukhari is Director General of Pakistan's Council of Research in Water Resources.
Arsenic is purely a poison. A small amount of pure arsenic can cause death. It causes waterborne diseases, bladder cancer, lung cancer, skin cancer, and heart disease.
Arsenic is naturally occurring, leaching out of rocks into the soil and groundwater. Irrigation then spreads contaminated water onto food crops. And when wells for drinking water are shallow, more arsenic makes its way into the water supply. A recent study by the Swiss Federal Institute of Aquatic Science and Technology shows that the level of arsenic in Indus Valley water supplies is up to 10 times higher than the safe levels set by the World Health Organization. 50 to 60 million people are likely to be affected by arsenic poisoning in the region. Dr. Navidullah is an expert in water quality at Peshawar University.
I am afraid it is a very alarming situation in our country, which needs the immediate attention of the government. It is risky only because our people have no awareness or very little awareness about arsenic. We must initiate an awareness campaign immediately.
There are no cures for arsenic poisoning. Avoiding contamination is the best solution. Digging deeper wells could help avoid high levels of arsenic. Arsenic filters would also reduce the risks of poisoning. In the meantime, tired of waiting for government action, Sharif tells me he wants to sell his land so that he can buy a water filtration plant for his neighbors and family.
The illness can't be overcome completely, but at least it can be reduced if our government could provide water filtration plants so that poor people can get clean water.
For Isha Calling, I am Mudassar Shah in Sindh province in Peshawar, Pakistan.
You're listening to Asia Calling KBR. For millions of people, water scarcity is a way of life, and farmers are some of the hardest hit without clean water to produce food. Meanwhile, industry sucks up millions of gallons of water and spits it back out dirty and contaminated. If that water was treated and managed, we could see a renaissance in food production, especially in Asia. Reporter Rick Wasserman has this story from the world's largest water forum, World Water Week in Stockholm, Sweden.
Without water, there is no life. It's the Earth's most precious resource, but it's often squandered and it's rarely recycled. So Hail Al-Nakvi is an engineer, and he grew up in Pakistan's fertile Punjab region, or the land of the rivers. He tells me he has watched as the area is sucked dry.
Unfortunately, with the passage of time, now those rivers are just shrinking and squeezing because of the, we may say, mismanagement of the water. There are two kinds of the issues. One is the water quantity, and the other is the water quality.
At this year's International Water Week in Sweden, international experts focused on how water can be reused so that the planet can support a growing population. For now, crops use 70% of the world's fresh water resources, but that's not always clean water. It's often reused water that has been contaminated by industry or excreta. In Asia, up to 80% of wastewater runs straight into rivers. It contains pathogens and chemicals, and they're absorbed into food crops, livestock, and fish that people go on to eat. Sohail explains.
In the different fish species and in their bones, there exists some heavy metals which is coming to our food chain. Most of the farmers are unaware. They don't know it is also mixed with the industrial hazardous, which is the alarming situation in the rural communities.
That contamination can lead to sickness, anything from diarrhea to long-term disabilities and death. Farmers prefer wastewater because of its nutrients. They are often unaware that it is dangerous and that they are putting consumers at risk. But who is to blame for the pollution? Well, water researcher Jenny Grönvall says the textile industry is one of the worst offenders, especially in India.
The discharges from the textile industry is very heavy in contaminants, not least chemical compounds. Some of them are very toxic.
Jenny says there are solutions that would allow farmers to grow food more safely.
So we have good technology, we have good infrastructure, we have quite a lot of competence, but that needs to be used.
She says the responsibility for treating wastewater lies squarely with industry. I was curious to see what can be done to reduce and reuse wastewater properly. Done right, farmers and consumers the world over would benefit. So I took a bus trip with a group of water experts to a pharmaceutical factory where around 10 billion tablets are produced each year. We took a look at their water treatment plant.
This is an MBBR reactor. You can see the plastic carriers.
Wastewater emission from this plant is 99.8% free of pollutants. It is a state-of-the-art facility. Fungi, bacteria, and active carbon are used to remove organic waste from water. Chemical separation removes harmful phosphorus and iron sulfate. Jacob Lund is communications director at the plant.
We have a responsibility as a manufacturer of medicines and also, the active pharmaceutical ingredients, that we do not do any harm to the environment.
But the same company has pharmaceutical plants in 17 other countries, and Lund wouldn't tell us what water treatment standards are like in those parts of the world. It's expensive to treat industrial wastewater, so companies often cut corners or don't bother. But it must become a priority, says WHO Deputy Director for Land and Water Olkay Unver. In spite of all the available technology, the best advice to save water, says Unver, stop eating red meat.
To produce 1 kilo of red meat, you use about 10 tons of water, 10,000 kilos of water.
There is only so much water in the world to go around. But if we protect fresh water and use the technology that's available to recycle wastewater, we might just get a little closer to zero hunger. This is Rick Wasserman in Sweden for Asia Calling.
For decades, the village of Cirompang in West Java has been largely self-sufficient, relying on indigenous wisdom to grow and harvest enough rice for its almost 2,000 residents each year. KBR journalist Yudi Rakman visited the Indonesian village to find out more.
The women here at Cirompang village in Banten province are making music with their mortars, a tool used for pounding rice. It's a sign of the harvest to come. Cirompang village is located in an area of indigenous land near Halimun Salak National Park in West Java. Even when the seasons are erratic or there is a drought, there is never a food shortage here. That's thanks to the advice of the indigenous elders, or Olot, people like Abah Amir, who choose the day to plant and harvest each year based on the constellations.
So we calculate the planting time based on the stars. When the rice is blooming, the pests usually start attacking. So we have a way, using the stars to avoid that.
The villagers believe the method can predict pests such as birds, worms and mice, as well as drought. Abah Amir says pesticides and other poisons used to kill pests are not permitted in the village, so they use a different way based on the knowledge of their ancestors.
Supaya tidak terkena hama itu adalah merubah jadwal tanam, geserna setahun.
To anticipate pests, we change the date of planting because the stars are always moving. When the pests are out, they can eat the rice. In the village, no single pest is allowed to be killed because they have the right to life. If you kill the pests, bad luck will follow.
Itu di sawah udah bikin plat tebaran gitu ya.
Iya.
Kemudian ditebar. Setelah itu tumbuh-tumbuh udah mulai pas.
For centuries, the indigenous people of Cirompang have lived in this area. The space is 637 hectares and includes rice fields, vegetable gardens, and indigenous forest. Rice is normally planted twice a year using these traditional methods. Including the angklung music that signifies this time, rice is harvested here the old-fashioned way. The rice seeds are planted and harvested by hand. No tractors or gardening tools are used. As for irrigation, the villagers depend on rainfall and the river. There are certain rules in place to protect the rainwater. Trees from the forest, for example, can be cut down. Amir says the farmers have certain days off as well.
We cannot go to the rice field on Fridays and Sundays, only for gardening.
When it's time for harvest, the grains are distributed to residents in the village and stored in the barns. There are about 100 of those. If a villager runs out of grain, they can ask for extra rice health in the barns. The harvest feeds all 1,690 residents of Cirompang each year. They are also prohibited from selling their harvest in the market, says Abah Amir.
Rice can be stored in the barn for a long time, and the variety of padi is not allowed to be sold. The seeds did not come from the government or anyone, but directly from nature.
The indigenous community of Cirompang have also begun to plant other vegetables, peppers, tomatoes, cabbages, cucumbers, and onions to meet their daily needs.
Cirompang is a living proof the ancestors knew a thing or two about food self-sufficiency. For Asia Calling KBR, this report was produced by Yudi Rahman in West Java. That's all for this edition of Asia Calling. Our program today was produced in the studios of Radio KBR in Jakarta, Indonesia. To find out more about our show, send us a message on our Asia Calling Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Asia Calling for more updates. You can now also podcast the show. Go to the iTunes Store or your podcasting app and search for Asia Calling and subscribe for free to the weekly episodes. I'm Nicole Kirby, back next week with more stories from Asia.